On our earth, before writing was invented, before the printing press was invented, poetry flourished. That's why we know that poetry is like bread. It should be shared by all, by scholars and by peasants, by all our vast, incredible, extraordinary family of humanity. That was Pablo Neruda. I'm Bob Holman, and this is the Poetry is Bread podcast, where poetry challenges us, makes us think, and with imagination and courage, changes the world. Well, our two poets today met in the mid-90s in a Washington, D.C. prison. One, Mamalu Stewart, had been sentenced to two life sentences plus 40 years for murder. He was 16 years old. The other, Saul Williams, had just been cast as a poet-rapper in a movie to be called Slam and had been smuggled in as part of a documentary film crew with the idea that the film's prison scenes could be secretly shot while the documentary on the D.C. prison system was being made. Well, maybe we should just pick it up right there with the two of you telling the story rather than me.
Well, yeah. We are living through wild times. Mamalu and I are always happy to be in the same room or virtual space. We have shared a connection for about over 25 years now. And as you were stating, Bob, you know, Mamalu is on the other side of those bars now and literally in his car driving free. I hope you got your seatbelt on, but I hope you got your seatbelt on.
Free is last. Free at last.
You know?
Maybe I should just introduce the two of you with a little bio, huh? With a little bio, and then we can maybe get back to the past and into the future. Which is what puts Mamalu outside. On October 7th, 2019, Mamalu S.K. Stewart, 22 years after he'd been incarcerated, a juvie lifer, as we'd mentioned, acquired his freedom through the Incarceration Reduction Amendment Act, which allowed juveniles who got life sentences to get out of there. And you can read all about this straight in his autobiography, My Journey Home. My Journey Home, Mamalu, M-O-M-O-L-U, Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, now driving a car out there on the freeways in D.C., a rapper poet, a motivational speaker whose story and voice actually motivate. And he still lives there in Washington. Check out his recent interview with our hitman, Bones Malone, on Vlad TV. Now I'll just go to you, Saul, for a minute. The multidimensional Saul Williams is a poet with six books out, actor who played Tupac on Broadway in the best hip-hop musical of all time that was seen by nobody, Holler If You Hear Me, filmmaker with his wife, Anicia Uzeman. They made the breakthrough Afrofuturist film Neptune Frost. And he's probably best known as a, quote, recording artist musician, end quote, with five albums, in quotes. Every word you say about Saul has to be in quotes because they take on another additional meaning when they refer to his approach to life and art itself. Here are these two guys in this virtual space who met when they were doing a hip-hop rhyme, was doing an improv, was what, an off-the-dome battle in prison. One was being a movie star, and the other was serving a life sentence. Now, we're all the same.
It's deep.
Mamalu, you hear Bob clearly?
Yes, I hear him wonderfully. And okay, I'm the only
one who doesn't.
Oh, yeah, and I wanted to say, like, you can't hear him clearly, so?
I hear you clearly, but I don't hear Bob clearly. But it's all right. Keep going.
Yeah. Well, you know, Bob has a little rough voice. You know what I mean? Shout out, Bob. So, in all actuality, I did 23 years and 3 days, and I was sentenced to two life sentences plus 75 years. So I just wanted to make that correction. For anybody that's watching, my main Mama Lou SK Stewart, as Bob, already revealed, I am a multi-dimensional artist. I'm a visual artist, rap artist, my author. I've been in several documentaries, not several, but two documentaries. And I was, fortunate to be in the movie Slam with Saul, Sonya, Bones, and, all the beautiful people that was in that movie. I did 23 years before I was able to come home, and now I'm working in Washington, D.C. as a violence interrupter, and not only as a violence interrupter, but as a mentor, and it's still very serious in this city. A lot of the things that I was confronted with when I was younger, it hasn't changed. And the only difference is I'm on the right side of the fight now, because when I was younger, I was more destructive because of whatever trauma that I had experienced. And, now I'm able to bring some type of reconciliation to the community. And, I don't know if you guys have been, paying attention, but the murder rate's been going up, very, very high. Maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, I just lost my cousin. He was like a brother to me. They shot him 41 times. It's still a fight.
Yeah.
Most of the people that's dying, man, they really kids. So, that's my piece right there.
And so let me ask you, Mama Lou. Let me just ask you, as an artist, when you're experiencing that, when you're so close to it, when as you referred to yourself as a violence interrupter, like when you have that much on the ground continual experience and what have you, how does it affect you as a writer? Is creation a part of your grieving process? Is this a part of your workout process? I know you do bodybuilding and all that type of stuff. Like, what part of the process does creativity play for you?
So it's definitely therapeutic. It gives me the opportunity, from experiencing these types of things and then going within my mind and being able to draw an imaginary world, a world that can exist, because everything exists within our minds first. And then, from within the mind, we come up with different words to, impact the culture, and not just to sing about, trauma, but to see how we can use every element of our creativity to help change the destructive paradigm that our children are growing up in, that our, adults are satisfied with, and, just to keep that good fight up. It's like you're drawn from the spirit, in order to create,
Yeah. I mean, when I met you, you were 16 or 17, you were already an artist, but as we know, you were locked up serving two life sentences and plus 75 years. But how much were you relying on art then?
So, and I didn't even realize how much I relied on art when I was younger, but it was my whole life. Everything that I wrote about, like even on the song Thug Life in DC, when, I was saying that, I tell them I didn't do it, and they, they said that all you niggas are the same. And that was my way of explaining what it was like to be growing up in racism. Because it didn't matter if I didn't do a crime or anything like that. The main thing that they were saying was, you black, you could have done it, or you did do it, because there was charges that I was arrested for that I didn't do.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? But at the same time, it's like,
there was no justice in that system. So it was just, you know, a way of combating a system that would seem, you know, indestructible, right? A system that had no morals and, you know, was judging me off the same laws that it was guilty of. Yeah. So it gave me some sort of peace.
Right. Now, but tell me this and tell the listener too, because, you know, a lot of people, they hear somebody serve time or what have you, and they listen to our stories. And sometimes it's kind of like what we call poverty porn. You know what I'm saying? Like they get off and like, and just imagine the worst conditions. But I know, you know, your story doesn't begin in the worst conditions. I know your father played, you know, a very, you know, academic and important role. Tell us a bit of your background so that people kind of understand that, you know, how unique your story and situation is.
So my father was a professor in political science, and he actually had 4 doctorate degrees, political science, theology, philosophy, and psychology, and he was an African nationalist. And you know, I grew up in a full household with my mom and my dad, and until infidelity set in and, you know, distrust and things like that. And eventually my mom's and her boyfriend murdering my dad. And then from there, my life spiraled out of control. I was 6 at that time. And then I went on to move in Northeast Washington, D.C., where crime was rampant. And this is in the 80s. So this is when, you know, the crack cocaine was rampant and saturated our whole community. You know, in society at once. Like, so my aunt that I moved in the household with had a husband that was addicted to crack cocaine. And, you know, and not only was his addiction an enemy, but, you know, the fact that he was illiterate, you know, made him or created some type of thought within his mind that he could beat me and, you know, drown me and do certain things to me that would make me tougher for the world that I would have to face. And I think that, you know, he was greatly wrong about his approach to those things. And eventually, you know, I ran away from that environment. And when I ran away from that environment, I found myself in the street homeless and, you know, struggling with starvation and, you know, a warm place to sleep. And and once when I ran away, I eventually, you know, came back to the household because I couldn't endure that. And then the violence within there, exacerbated. And then I ran away again. And this time when I ran away, I got stabbed in my face. And that's what made me pick up a gun and started, you know, thinking that if I didn't live a certain type of way, that I wouldn't be able to make it. And that's when I, you know, did commit a murder, because the guy that I actually was locked up for murdering, he killed my best friend and shot my other friend and then went to kill my friend's mother. And then we retaliated for that, not out of hatred, but out of survival. We wanted to survive. We wanted to live, you know, but that's still no excuse for taking a life, because we can never bring that back. You know, so when that actually happened to him, a piece of my soul died as well.
I hear you. You know, I hear you. So tell me this. So that's one side. Okay. The other side is, you know, you grew up, you said it's the 80s and the whole nine. It's like, and you're a hip hop artist. You're a poet. You're a writer. You're a multidimensional artist, as you said, but I want to know, like, how and when, how did hip hop specifically, music in general, but hip hop specifically, how did it reach you? What happened? What did you hear? Is there a moment that you can point to? Is there like a song? Is there like, you know, anything like that where you're like, yo, one day I heard that, you know, like, is there an origin story of you as a rapper?
So, you know, I came up when, you know, like I was real young. I know I probably had no business hearing some of the music that I was hearing, but some of it was like, you know, MC Ren. I don't know if you're familiar with,
Okay.
well, of
From
course,
LA, from
you're familiar with
NWA.
MC Ren. Yeah, so MC Ren was like one of my favorite rappers back then. And you know, because he was lyrical and you know, he used to talk about the system and the things that I saw, you know, growing up. You know, it was just like it was mad crazy, like growing up in Washington, D.C., watching people being, you know, being murdered, losing their life and you know, things like that. And it was just like, you know, I wanted to have a way that I could be able to express myself, you know, by using, you know, using my talent. Because I figured that always I've been rapping since I was like eight, you know, so it was like, you know, it was always in me. It was always in me. So I, you know, I always rapped and so I used to listen to MC Ren, and back then it was more like I heard more California rappers like MC 8 and you know, but these guys they was gangster rappers, right? So that gangster rapper stuff was like really, you know, moving me. And you know, being though I had a lot of pain in me, you know, I'm rapping that stuff and that stuff is becoming a part of my life, like you know, MC Ren and Spice One and you know, these type of guys. But we also listen to Wu-Tang. So Wu-Tang and you know, these type of guys, they was giving us, you know, the wisdom. You
The
know,
street philosophy.
they you know what I'm saying? They giving us the life, you know what I mean? And then so we had the best of, you know, both worlds, like, you know, death and life. You
Got
know what I'm
you.
saying? And you know, so I think that it was just like always in me to be able to express myself through music. And I just started freestyling. And when I went to school, you know, like ever since elementary school, I'm rapping and you know, the people they listening to me, you know, everybody's like standing at my table and you know, and that's just what it was.
And
You
I
know,
guess to
that's
put
just
it
what it
in,
was. Like,
and to put it in context, I mean, because at that time, DC is the murder capital of America, you know?
murder capital.
And I'm talking about the streets because also you have the White House and the government, which is like the murder capital of the imperial world as well, you know?
Absolutely.
You got the chief murderer, you got the chief murderers
I'm
on the
sorry.
global scale in, you know, in the
Yeah.
white walled chambers of the Capital District. And then you have Chocolate City, where it's the murder
Yeah.
capital of the
Murder
country,
capital.
right? You got Marion Barry as a mayor.
As
You
the
have
mayor, yeah.
a rebellious, a really, really rebellious city as the nation's capital, because DC, for those, you know, DC still to this day does not have proper representation in the
Yeah.
Congress, in the Senate, right? It does not
Yeah.
have proper representation. And so Marion Barry is the one who created those license plates, which I remember from the 80s in DC, that said taxation without representation. I don't know if you remember
That's
that.
deep.
But I remember that
Yeah.
in DC at the time, the license plate said taxation without representation. It was
The
a
same
middle finger
words,
to the government.
exactly the same words that were used when the U.S. declared its independence from England. You know, that's what was happening.
Wow.
Wild time. And so you're growing up literally in the belly of the beast, and then being thrown in the belly of the beast, you know,
Yeah.
at a young age, and here you are now.
So much of a blessing, man.
And so when we met, Because I have my first impression of you, right? I remember one of the things I
Right.
remember is we had a cipher in the yard. And
Mm-hmm.
I remember I said a rhyme, and you were the kid who said the rhyme that I said back to me. I don't
Yeah.
know if you remember that, but you
Yeah.
like said it straight
Absolutely.
back to me what I said. And I was like,
Yeah.
okay. Immediately in my head, I was like, yo, these kids want to hear new shit so bad that they're like
Yeah.
memorizing on one listen.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's genius. That's genius, man.
That blew my mind.
For
That
real.
blew my mind so much that I was begging the director of Slam, Mark Levin, that night and the next morning, like, yo, all I want to do is film that kid. We need to do something with that kid. We need to do something with that kid.
It's
And so
amazing.
he's like, fine, we'll start the day with that. And
It's amazing, man.
yeah, and that's how it goes down.
And that shot was so amazing. The cinematographer goes back and forth between the two cells as you guys are going back and forth and creating this collaboration or battle. I can't tell which it is, but that scene is sort of a centerpiece in the film, you know. At least I think so.
Absolutely. Man, it was like, so for me, it was more so just it wasn't a battle because, Big Bruh, he was just like, Big Brother GOAT. So it was more so like a opportunity that I wasn't able to even comprehend at that time. Only thing I know is, I'm facing two life sentences and, like I'm facing my whole life in prison. And, some people that was there, some of the young kids, they was thinking that, from this, this is gonna happen. Like, I'm gonna be released from prison. And I'm like, nah, I don't really see that happening. Like, one day I'm gonna go home, but it ain't gonna happen right now, right? And I just knew that it was a blessing, just to be around Saul and Sonya and Mark and you and like everybody that was in there and that that we actually had the opportunity to work with. I knew that we was making history. I knew that, you know what I'm saying? But I didn't really understand the whole beauty and magic that would come from it.
Well, I don't think any of us did, you know. Like I was on a different trajectory in that I was in my final year. I think, yeah, I was in my final year, or I just finished my final year of graduate school at NYU. I didn't know anything about what I was being asked to participate in. I had never been in a prison before. The only thing that I was really clear on the fact was that I was a rapper, you know, that I knew how to rhyme. And so that was where my confidence was, in the
Right.
fact that I knew how to rap and I knew how to act. And that I was ready for interacting with people. If it was on those terms, then it was no problem, you know? And
Absolutely.
yeah,
Yeah.
that's what it was about. And you remember, I mean, like it was such a moment in relationship to rhyming. Like, you know, there's also the level of excitement that comes with if you happen to be lucky enough to be born or around, kind of around the moment when our art form is born, you know? So
Absolutely.
the art form was fresh enough and new enough for us to all kind of revel in it and kind of all show like our different and unique relationships to it. You know, whether it's your voice, whether it's
Right.
your flow, whether it's whatever, you know. Plus, we were really clear on the fact, as all of us were, you know, we were really clear on the fact that the nation had perpetually declared war against us, you know. And so what was, you know, the fact that so many of our population were locked up, that so many of our population didn't have the same privileges as the other parts of the population and the whole nine, none of that was news to us, you know.
Right.
So yeah, all of these things, all of these stories found their ways within the music, and the poetry of the time. And so, yeah, and for me, it was a merging of worlds between, like you, I had grown up thinking about music. I wasn't really thinking about poetry as a kid. I was thinking about theater. I was thinking about Shakespeare. I was doing school plays, you know. And I grew up in the hood in a place called Newburgh, New York. And the only difference was that there was my dad was a pastor. He was the pastor of a local church, and
My
essentially,
dad was too.
yeah, you
That's
know,
crazy.
yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, the big deal was
Go
that
ahead, go ahead. My bad.
yeah, exactly. The big deal was that like the biggest dealers in my town, their moms went to my dad's church, and so I grew up with those dudes whose you know, who were the biggest dealers, and if shit went down at school, those guys were the ones who were like, "Nah, leave him alone." And that's that's essentially how I made it through. You
Wow.
know, they're like, "Nah, leave that nigga alone. Leave him alone." And so, you know, you know, so between that and me, people are upset with me because I could rap, because I probably would beat somebody at the lunch table. And they'd be like, "Oh, you could rap, but can you fight?" And then, you know, my boy would roll up and be like, "Nah, y'all leave him alone." And so, woo! And so that's how I made it safe for you. You know?
I'm telling you, man, it's a
Yeah,
blessing,
yeah, yeah.
bro. Oh, hey, and I'm coming out with my documentary, man. It's in the works, and so we're gonna need you on there. We're gonna need you on the documentary to grace the
Without a doubt.
documentary. That has to happen.
Without a
Has to
doubt.
happen. Yeah,
Without a doubt.
even if we have to come to Paris to get it, to
You
get
know,
the interview.
you already hung out
You
with me
know,
over here now, which is already
I'm
a
telling you,
miracle of sorts,
man.
right?
Miracle, miracle,
Right?
man.
That was
I enjoyed
certainly a
that so much.
miracle when we were at the 25th anniversary of that film, because
Woo.
Sundance picked it out as one of the films that was going to go into their archives, going to be digitized and you know, all recolorized and all sound moved and everything. But that's what brought the
Beautiful.
whole team back together again. We got to see you guys in action.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Exactly. What's
That
crazy about that is
was a
that,
blessing.
yeah, I mean, for us to be able to go, you know, back to Sundance with this film 25 years later, and this time bring and have Mama Lou with us, you know,
It had won the
for Mama
Audience
Lou to
Choice
have,
Award there. That's 25
right?
years before, right?
Yeah.
And Mama Lou looked like he'd be
Beautiful.
in jail forever at that point.
Yeah.
There we were
Right.
25 years later. Did poetry set you free, Mama Lou?
Yes, sir. I see, because like we gotta realize is that, like, first and foremost, I always call them my ancestors, right? I would be nothing without them. You know what I mean? Like even this morning, I think about a lot of things that I'm going through in my life, and they tell us that God is in the sky, and they tell us all of these different lies. And when we learn certain things on our own, about how God exists in that secret place, in the recesses of your mind, and you able to like go in and really tap into that spirit and do better, and it just it made me cry when I was in my prayer today, when I was thinking about it, and just finding peace in spite of whatever struggle that I gotta go through, especially when you're seeing, your family and your friends and, these people dying every day, being murdered every day, and sometimes the ones that pour into everybody need somebody or need something to pour into them. But when you don't have anybody to pour into you, that's when you seek within yourself and you ask for the strength that come from God. You know what I mean? And it relies within us. So, when I call on my ancestors and I ask them to be with me And that's the only reason why I have certain talents, like, you know, being able to rap, or, you know, being able to paint, or being able to articulate myself, you know. And I think that on that note in which you asked that question, that it set me free. Like, true freedom is when, like, no matter where you are, you able to, like, you able to go within yourself and to find that peace. You know what I'm saying? Like, and, you know, that peace is something that, you know, that's a form of freedom. That's freedom, because you got a whole lot of people that are like physically free, but they're not mentally free. And I think that can be a very sad place to be. You know what I'm saying? So I'm grateful that, you know, that I have the freedom of my mind, and, you know, of my spirit, that in spite of whatever I may go through in my life, that I'm able to, like, really go within myself and to still find peace and harmony, you know, in the work that I'm doing, you know, because, of course, you know, I love the work that I'm doing, but I don't love it on the level in which I do it, because sometimes I like to think, or I'm thinking, like, damn, am I doing enough? You know,
yeah,
am I doing
you.
Enough? And I, yeah.
Tell me this, bro.
But
you go back into the prison?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. How does that feel, yo?
Yeah. So, you know, I actually was released October 7th, 2019. And for this one, when I was released, when I went back into the prison like 2 days after my release date, you know, because I wanted to show the young men that, like, yeah, this can be you, right? And of course, sometimes, like, it can be a bit much, you know, like flashbacks and stuff like that starts to pop into your mind, and you know, you like, man, I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I still just think about the fact, like, I'm here for, you know, I'm here for them. You know, they need to see something different. Like that time when you spit that rhyme, how it impacted me, where I was able to, you know, regurgitate it, or, you know, do the same thing that you did. It's like that. So now when they see me come back in, they like, man, if he did it, I want to do it over.
Yep.
You know, I want to be the guy that gets out and don't sell drugs when you lose your car. You know, you about to get kicked out. Don't blow nobody's brains out. Don't go to crime. You know, instead you go within yourself. Boom. And you stay patient. You stay patient. You know,
and that's where that communication with the ancestors, the relationship to God and spirituality, and understanding the importance of patience, and understanding, you know, that you, if you give it time, those things will appear, right? That you don't have to kill for it. It's all right. I see you. All right.
Yeah. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I don't even know if Bob is still there.
Yeah, I'm here. Mamalu, mm-hmm. I heard you for just a second there. Are you back? Here he is. Hey, Mamalu.
Yeah, I'm here, brother. Yeah, so, you know, it's just like, you know, now, you know, you see so many people die, you know, be murdered, and, you know, it's just like a reminder that we are only here for a moment, right? And I've seen so many young people since I've been home that's rushing. And, you know, it's like they in a race. And, you know, at some point in our lives, we try to figure out, like, what am I here for? It has to be deeper than just, you know, existing, and then, okay, then I don't exist anymore. So the more I go within myself, I realize that I am a spiritual being. You know, I realized that I'm a part of Mother Earth. You know, I realized that the earth is alive the same way I am alive. My body's gonna go. This is the same teachings that my ancestors taught. So I have to be steadfast at it, no matter what, no matter if I got $1 million or $2, no matter if things going good or my perspective, if things going bad.
Yep.
Right. And you know, and sometimes you gotta welcome good trouble. You know,
okay.
you gotta welcome it. So
yep.
To answer your question, how did I feel going in there? It's like welcoming good trouble. welcoming good trouble. Cause I'm in my mind, you know, half the time I don't want to go in there, but at the same time, that's where I'm needed.
Yeah.
At times, you know.
Yeah. No, I'm sure you represent a level of inspiration, you know, for so many of the cats that you see inside. Like you said, you know, for them to see what's possible, you know, and for them to then try to, you know, spin that out in their own lives and to, you know, put their faith in the ancestors and all of that guidance that you give. I know it means so much.
Ooh.
Absolutely.
It's a blessing,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, once again, it's like replaying the what goes on in the movie Slam, because there Sonya Sohn comes into the prison and helps the young poet. What was the name of your poet in there, Saul, in that movie?
I'm just letting you know, I don't hear you, Bob.
So oh, okay. Well, anyway, you was...
He said Sonya Sohn's comes into the jail, and, you know, he asked, what was your name of the movie, in the movie?
Raymond Joshua.
So Raymond Joshua gets freed because of the poetry that she brings, the way Mama Lou's going back into the prisons now to free the souls. Yeah.
It's sad, man. But it's like that movie was so impactful. And you know, the 25-year anniversary was the first time I ever saw the movie.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh my
God. So when we went out there, like that was the first time I ever saw the movie.
Yep.
You know, so you know, that was one of them times I'm like, wow, man. You know, this the first, and it was just such a beautiful experience, man. And like I said, it, you know, it just allows me the audacity, you know, that to be able to believe and know that, you know, it's so much more to go on. Like, no matter what you're going through, like, I didn't even think that this call would do as good as this has done for me thus far, you know, like, and
well, that's the thing.
And I'm like, wow.
You know, that's the thing. The name of this podcast that Bob has is called Poetry is Bread, right? And when I reflect on that, I'm like, yeah, you know, like some of my greatest friends and allies on this planet are truly our poets, you know, like right
Absolutely.
Now for the past 2 months, you know, I've been fed by poetry so much as we've been, you know, me and a team of poets have been teaming up to fight the system in terms of our relationship to Palestine and what's happening in the Middle East, the genocide of Palestinians by, you know, Israeli occupying forces and what have you. And the most courageous, you know, amongst us, aside from human rights attorneys, have been, and aside from the Palestinians themselves, have been poets. And it's been poets because, you know, while everybody else is afraid of getting fired, you know, when you make a decision to be a poet, that's already a form of resignation, you know? Like, what are you going to fire me from, Nick?
Absolutely.
Like, and so the way that we're fed, you know, and that first, you know, moment that you and I shared in that courtyard, you know, in the DC jail was that, you know, it was like poetry was bread. When I heard you regurgitate what I had just spit, you know, it was like, oh, okay, I see that this is literally feeding, you know, these kids here, like that they're waiting to hear the latest ideas and rhymes and da da. Like that's mm-hmm. and what you said, you know, when you and the Selnets to me rhyming and the whole nine fed me. And that's literally how we have been feeding each other, you know, in the first moments of our connection and what have you. And for you to like take those steps in realization and self-realization and realize, like you said, that there is a therapeutic relationship to the craft, and also realizing that being of service, right? So that you question whether you're doing enough, you know, and going in and in a way providing a kind of bread for the people that you are now in touch with as a mentor, you know, as someone, you know, who people look up to and are grateful to connect with and grateful to know that, you know, other worlds and other possibilities are available. There's so much beauty and life in art, in creation, in having that relationship to stories and storytelling and real and music, right? Finding the musicality in our own existence and experience so that we can find the harmony in relationship to ourselves, to our lives, to our spirits, to our ancestors, to our guides, you know, to that sense of expression that expresses and explores that which uplifts, that which connects, and that also that which destroys, if a system needs to be destroyed, right? Whether it's Joshua, Jericho, right, and trumpets, you know, or whether it's apartheid systems, you know, overseas that we have to destroy, whatever it is, you know, we here to make sense of that and to help put things in their place. And so I guess I'm just saying all that to say, you know, because I'm here today to support you in your presence being here. You know, like I jumped in, Bob, kind of in the role as the interviewer, also just because I want to help setting up Mamalu to talk about himself and his life, because it's inspiring and because it's so necessary to hear, you know, to hear your story.
Absolutely.
And I just want to thank you.
Yeah.
For sharing.
Yeah. Mamalu is just, when I heard the two of you at Sundance, the way you went at it, like, these longtime friends, but who have, you know, just been there for each other in a way. And saw that Mamalu's been there for you too. It was so special, and today has been so special too. Mamalu, so great to be able to do this. And Saul, you are a great interviewer. Don't you worry about that know, man.
What do you want? Because I can't hear.
Yeah, I know. Well, I just give him a compliment, Mamalu. Give him a compliment.
He's saying basically that, you know, you are a great interviewer, and you know, the time that, you know, we was all together, you know, supporting one another and things like that. But I just wanted to say, you know, the same for me, man. You know, the same for me. I'm ecstatic, always appreciative, you know, to hear your story as well, man. And, you know, I realized that, you know, time is always of an essence, like, but time never was when man was not. So whatever we doing while we here, we make the most of it. You know, that's what our lives is predicated on. You know, we don't fear death. You know, we don't fear imprisonment. You know, the only thing we fear is, you know, not being who we are totally, right? Hello. And doing what's right, right? So, and that's the greatest purpose of my life right now. That's the only thing that matters to me, because yes, I know what gives me peace. What gives me peace is being able to, when I speak within myself, to, you know, that higher power within me, you know, and that exists all around me, that exists within you, that exists within me, that exists within Bob, that exists within, you know, this brown man, this yellow man, this white man, this red man, this purple man, this pink man, this, it exists in everybody.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean? But it's up for us to tap into that power, you know what I mean? And just to live, like, to live righteously, you know what I mean? And to do, because I was reading something yesterday in James, and it was speaking about, it said be slow to wrath, be slow to speak, but be quick to listen, right? And then it said that, you know, because when a person is quick to wrath, then you're going against the divine, you know? So I understand that, you know, my life is about learning.
Indeed.
You know, and the more I learn, the more I know that I don't know nothing.
You know, yep. There you go.
You know, so I'm just here, man, and you know, and I got faith. I got faith, and I'm, you know, I'm working towards what I'm supposed to do. But if I was, you know, whenever, you know, my creator or my ancestors embrace my spirit, man, I want to be known to be a person that stood on what was right without fear, without falter, you know what I mean? Without failure, you know, and you know, that's it, you know? So
that's it.
That's a blessing, man, to be a part of that spirit.
Yeah.
You know?
Indeed. Bob, I got to bounce.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you. Let me ask this. Ask him if he can do a poem before he leaves. And you do one too, Mama Lou.
Do you guys need do you need to stop the recording before I turn off?
Do we need to stop?
Yeah, stop the recording.
Ask him if he can do a poem for us, Mama Lou, and then we can close out.
He said, can you do a poem for him?
Yeah, here we go. Time is money. Money is time. So I keep 7 o'clock in the bank and gain interest in the hour of God. I'm saving to buy my freedom. God grant me wings. I'm too fly, not too fly. I soar to look at humans without wings, so I soar and find tickle in the feathers of my wings, flying hysterically over land. Numerically, I am 7 mountains higher than the valley of death, 7 dimensions deeper than dimensions of breath. The fiery sun of my passions evaporates the love lakes of my soul, clouds my thoughts, and rains you into existence. As I take flight on bolts of lightning, claiming chaos as my concubine and you as my me, I of the storm, you of the sea, we of the moon, land of the free, what have I done to deserve this? Am I happy? Happiness is a mediocre standard for a middle-class existence. I see through smiles and spell truth in the distance. Beyond one-dimensional smiles and laughter lies a hereafter, where tears are laughter. You have to do math to divide a smile by a tear times fear equals mere truth. As simply dwells in the air, that's a kiss. All I have to do is breathe and all else will follow. That's why drums are hollow. And I like drums. Drums are good, but I can't think straight. I lack the attention span to meditate. My attention spans galaxies. Here and now are immense. Seconds are secular. Moments are mine. Self is illusion. Music's divine. Noosed by the strings of Jimmy's guitar, I swing. Purple haze pendulum. Hypnotizing the part of I that never dies. Look into my eyes. The windows of the soul is fried chicken collards and cornbread. There's cornmeal, fire, turkey makes, and oil is the stolen blood of the earth. Used to make cars run and kill the fish. Who, me? I play scales. The scales of dead fish of oil slick seas. My sister blows wind through the hollows of fallen trees. And we are the echoes of eternity, echoes of eternity, echoes of eternity. Maybe you heard of us. We do rebirths, revolts, and resurrections. We threw basement parties in pyramids. I left my tag on the wall. The beats would echo off the stone and solidify into the form of light bulbs, destined at the heads of future generations. They're reaching up in the form of maybe you heard of us. If nothing, you must be trying to hear us, and in such cases, we can't be heard. We remain in the darkness unseen. In the center of unpaled bananas, we exist uncolored by perception, clothed to the naked eye. 5 senses cannot sense the fact of our existence. That's the only fact. In fact, there are no facts. Facts me a fact, and I'll telegram a hologram, a telephone, a son, a man, and tell him he is done. Leave a message on his answer machine telling him there are none. God and I are one, times moon, times star, times sun. The factor is me. You remember me. I played amethyst box on Saturn blocks till I got caught up by shots by earthling cops. They wanted me for the army or whatever. Picture me. I swirl like the wind, tempting tomorrow to be today, tiptoeing the fine line between everything and everything else. I am simply Saturn, swirling 7s through sooth, the soul living air of air, and I and all else follows, reverberating the space inside of drum hollows, packaging bottles and shipped to tomorrow, then sold to the highest nigger. I swing from the tallest tree, lynched by the lowest branches of me, praying that my physical will set me free, because I'm afraid all else is vanity. Mere language is profanity. I'd rather hum, have my soul tattooed to my tongue, and let the scriptures be sung in gibberish, as birds be simple fish in my soul aquarium, and intellect can't swim, so I stop combing my mind so my thoughts can lock. I'm tired of trying to understand perception. Are mangled, matted, and knotted. Anyway, life is more than what meets the eye and eye. So elevate eye to the third, but even that shit seems absurd, and your thoughts leave you third isolated. No man is an island, but I often feel alone. So I find peace through Om.
Ashe.
Ashe, indeed. Ashe. All right. Yeah, Saul Williams. Thank you so much, Saul. Au revoir. Thank him for us, Mama Lou. Go ahead.
Yeah, he sends his thanks, Saul.
All right,
he
sends his thanks.
And Mama Saul, Lou, we need to talk soon, Saul.
Okay.
Huh? Yeah. How about Mama Lou? Why don't you do one for us? Saul can go if he wants to. You know, if he's got busy.
Mine's gonna be very short. So I wrote this when I was over Paris, when I went to the Louvre, the museum.
Boom.
It just say, I searched for the ancestors up in the Louvre. They was too graceful. They brought them a move. Can't learn from their schools. They lie on their news. We super predators. Damn, I'm confused. They calling me rude. I ain't never been as cruel. I ain't never been a fool. Put a nigga on his shoes. Nigga jump to the moon. Thumbs up. He that dude. So they keep him out the room. Plus they feed him with a spoon. Lead that coon to his doom. Knowing the God, they calling them goon. Niggas be fries. They think like cartoons. Never knew that he was Jesus till he read his father's thesis. This the shit that they ain't teach us. Ancestors trying to reaches Europeans trying to bleach us, clear his mind in his features, up the iron on his teachers. That's a sign for the seekers. Those souls stay speeches. Only bros is believers who was chose to be teachers. Holy Ghost turned sieges so close to the ethers. High hope for the seers. Everyone want to be us. Learn this as a fetus.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah.
Hey, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Say less.
Ashe, y'all.
Ashe.
Well, thank you.
Ashe.
Whoa, beyond podcast, you folks out there. I'm Bob Holman, and thank you for listening to Poetry is Bread. Subscribe to our podcast to get notifications of new episodes, or check us out at BoweryPoetry.com. The podcast is co-produced by Ram Devanini, Flavia Roja with Rataplax. Artwork by Fabian Cerro Leo. This podcast series is funded by National Endowment for the Arts, New York State Council on the Arts, Governor of New York State, and the New York State Legislature. Keep listening.